Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, part two of a fine new collage by Chaz K. on how to respond to the environmental crisis. I hope you'll stay tuned. Virtual Renderings, also known as Chaz K, is back, as we happily announced last week. Our premier creator of progressive/radical audio collages has released a new one on our environmental crisis and on our personal and collective responses to the crisis. It's on those responses of ours that today's second and final installment focuses. We heard part one last week, with a mixture of music, poetry, and especially serious discussion by ecologists. That first half focused on the urgency of our environmental crisis and on the cause of the crisis, which is industrial civilization itself. A quick digression from an incurable English major. That's me. In England of the early 18th century, there were four great social and literary virtues: judgment, knowledge, wit, and taste. And I think Chaz K. and this collage had all four virtues in spades. For example, Chaz K.'s title is An Earth-Toned Collage of Collages. Now, instead of a collage of collages, he could have called it a meta-collage. But he didn't. 10 points extra credit for that. Today's installment focuses on the need to readjust our whole way of conceptualizing humans' relationships with all the other parts of the natural world. That is, the collage calls upon us to undergo a radical paradigm shift. And to their great credit, nobody in the recording uses that hackneyed term, paradigm shift. 10 extra points awarded for that, too. And no offense to all the good people in Hackney. But to return to madness. The original collage examined the seriousness of the crisis. That part we heard. Now the collage starts exploring what kinds of action might or probably won't produce good results. Spoiler alert, no clear, effective plan of action is obvious. For reasons of time, we will skip over much of this section and will focus on the third part of the composition, the need to reconceive our species' relationship with all the other species of our shared planet. Let's start.
How the market is not like a tropical forest. When layers of leaves, high canopy, mid-level broads and fans, short shrubs below, where herbs beneath them and moss on the floor catch light. Fungi in the soil recycle it all back to the top. Every conceivable niche is filled or overfilled, divinely superfluous beauty. In the market, everyone targets the center. It levels to a three-body problem with strange attractors looping in useless eddies. Work is taxed, capital let free to accumulate and be skimmed off. More like an overgrazed pasture, where each generation of forb is poorer than the last. It's an act of conjuring. The only real product is money, from money. The invisible hand is in your pocket.
Brainwashing is violence, and so is your silence when it's rooted in compliance. To stand firm in loving defiance.
If we could go back far enough, there's the history of the witch burnings. Most of the witches that were burnt were actually healers that were burnt. One of the bits of evidence that the church used to demonstrate being in some relationship with the devil was that if a woman, because women were not allowed education, if a woman was able to heal somebody and they didn't have the right training, because they couldn't have the right training because they couldn't read, the only way they could do that would be because the devil was doing the work for them. So if you were healing with herbs and you weren't given permission by the power elite, if you weren't a doctor, just the fact of healing somebody with herbs, if you were in the wrong century, in the wrong town, you were going to get burnt for it.
That's from the garden to the farthest, prayer made of stardust. Find your healing in the music that calls you, the voice that enthralls you. What do you belong to? Eyes up, there's the setting of the sun. Give thanks to each and everyone. The lesson is the medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face and I trust your hands. Medicine woman, medicine man.
The word radical. Now, I always have to look this one up because there are different ways of spelling radical. This is the botanical way of spelling radical. And the radical is the growing root tip of a bean sprout, the growing basal cap of the root, which is one of the strongest forces in nature. Without the botanical radicals, soil wouldn't work properly. It wouldn't be aerated. There wouldn't really be life in the soil. It's the radical of the growing plants which are turning the soil and allowing stuff to happen. If you've ever seen an oak tree or any tree growing through a boulder which is cracked in half, I'm sure you've all seen this. It's not growing through a cracked in half boulder. It cracked the boulder in half and was in the way, so it came through. Have you ever seen shepherd's purse or something equivalent breaking a sidewalk? It didn't grow in the crack. It produced the crack from underneath. Very quiet, very low key, not on the surface very radical, but if we weren't spraying the sidewalks all the time, it would just take a few years for things as simple and as profound as a shepherd's purse to completely recycle the concrete.
One of the things, the school system is basically about 100 years out of date, and Bucky Fuller made that point. He said, churches run 500 years behind the times, you know, schools 100 years behind the times, and so on. And I thought it was fascinating, because right after I read that, the Catholic Church reopened the heresy case against Galileo and found him innocent, you know, but it was like about 500 years to the day, you know, that happened. So that thing is, you know, that whole dynamic about us being the most intelligent people, about this entropy thing and all of that stuff, it's basically just not accurate. And it came out of old viewpoints in England, really, in the 19th century, when they were kind of the apex of scientific study. But it's just when you start to get that you live in a world where every living organism has a neural network as sophisticated or sometimes even more so than our own, that they have greater neural net capacity than we do, that in essence their brain is significantly larger, even though they might not have an organ that looks like the brain, they'll have a neural network that is very, very similar to our own. Once you start getting all of that, it not only undermines the entire reductive worldview, but it's terrifying to people who don't really know how to reach outside of themselves and communicate with another life form, even other human beings.
And I think it's one of the reasons why our culture has such a hard time coping with herbalists, is that one of the many reasons they have a hard time coping with herbalists is that we bridge so many realms, we bridge so many worlds. And when we're on a good day, we bridge those worlds really well. And let's acknowledge we all have bad days, but on the good days, we are, as a movement, as a field, characterized by synergy, characterized by cooperation between plants and humans, between practitioners and their patients. No therapeutic endeavor can possibly be value-free. It's just we pretend it can be. You know, we're either just treating the hemorrhoid or dispensing something. Actually, any time that you're involved in the transformative work of real healing, facilitating the plants doing the real healing, we're involved in a very profoundly radical transformation of the human soil. Involved in a profound marriage between the plants and humans and everything else. Actually, working at the interface, which is the evidence of the fact that we are all one. Herbalism is ecology in practice. So anytime you give anybody herbs, anytime you take herbs, anytime you talk to people about herbs, you're being profoundly radical, profoundly transformative, profoundly irritating to the dominant paradigm.
People have been so inculcated in a lot of these beliefs. It's like in the United States now, we only have a choice between like Christianity and science, and those are the kind of two monolithic belief systems that have been fighting it out. You know, neither one is exactly useful in its present form. But the thing that happens in the school system, there's this sort of thing like, oh, we have to be rigorous, we have to do this, we have to, you know, be based on science and this fundamental stuff. But the problem is they're still using models that are extremely old, and everybody's inculcated in that belief system. So everybody has seen parents shut down their children. I mean, like, if children say, well, that plant over there is sad, you know, the parents will go, oh, honey, plants don't have feelings. It's a really common thing for children to be told. And so it sort of starts earlier, because the invisible world is something people don't know much about, and they're afraid to encourage it in their children, because they also don't understand children very well for the most part. But really, once you get into the school system and they start dividing all of the subjects up into blocks, like chemistry this time, physics this time, you know, and you start having these sort of separate divisions, and the children become inculcated in this experience of the world being basically dead, and just it's sort of a resource that human beings can use, and it has to happen over and over again. Children naturally experience the world as alive and intelligent and aware. They have to be trained over and over and over out of that belief before we finally let go. And the longer we go into the school system, the longer we're in there, the worse it gets. Until finally, a lot of people graduate from college and however long they've gone in it, and they just don't know who they are anymore. They experience life is meaningless, and hence the Prozac industry.
As the world burns, the old masters, we hear, avoided challenging the status quo, as they also avoided contact with women and refrained from social activism. Considering the crimes of history, the Buddha wondered what to do. Thus, we sit, pursuing personal self-cultivation, serenity as proof of some transcendental virtue. In the great Kalpa fire, when all is consumed, is it consumed as well? Sit with this. Outside, the peasants pass buckets hand to hand.
And in the gray light that shapes the dawn, we see the things that we believe in. Light is substance and shadow form. Such sweet darkness to shape the things that we believe in. Oh, maiden mama crone, oh, maiden mama crone, oh, maiden mama crone.
So the basic premise of my work is that our world is built on a story, a mythology, or even that our world is a story. Understanding that that itself is a story, but one that's been useful to me in understanding things. So, like, on a pretty obvious level, things like nation states, corporations, money, they don't have any physical reality except what we create through our agreements about them. So you could very easily say that those things are a story. And even our understanding of how change happens in the world, what a self is, what's important in life, all of these things are conditioned by the narratives that we grow up in. So basically, the story of separation is what I call this underlying meta-narrative or mythology that says, yeah, who you are is a separate being in a world of other, kind of like this bubble of psychology bouncing around inside a flesh robot, and separate from other selves out there, and fundamentally separate from nature too, in that there are these generic particles out there, these masses, these arbitrary forces of nature that we need to protect ourselves against and someday master and overcome and transcend and rise above nature. So this is all part of the story of separation, separate from each other, separate from nature, and it's a story that isn't working very well anymore, at least. Maybe we once could pretend that it was working well and that we were on the verge of, you know, finally conquering nature, transcending death, synthesizing food, going off into space and achieving technological utopia. But that's getting harder and harder to maintain that pretense. And the crises that are built on that story, first and foremost, the ecological crisis that comes from seeing nature as just a bunch of stuff, that crisis is ejecting us from that story into first, like you said, the space between stories where we don't know what's real anymore. We don't know what's true anymore. We don't know who we are anymore, maybe as individuals, maybe as a species. And then into a new and actually very ancient story that offers different answers to those questions. Who are you? Well, the totality of all my relationships, a mirror of all of nature, a mirror of the cosmos. What's important to contribute to something greater than myself. So it offers a completely different navigating system and understanding of who we are and the way the world is. So that, for example, it becomes obvious that what we do to the world, we do to ourselves because we're not separate from the world. What happens to another being is happening to us inescapably, no matter how high a wall we build between us and no matter how developed our technologies of insulating and controlling are. It can't protect us because what's happening to the whales is happening to us inescapably. So that's the basic picture.
To shape the things that we believe in.
Issue in the transition is to know that ecosystems are collapsing, species have been driven to extinction, economies are collapsing everywhere, entire societies, like in Syria, half your people are living in refugee camps somewhere else. You know, that's a collapse. It's a social collapse. I think in the towns of Baltimore and in the towns of Missouri, we see a social collapse. But the key is not to respond to either fear or panic or hate. Because that is what is triggered for those who would like to maintain power in this period. When I hear the speeches of your presidential candidates, you know, based on fear and hate, they are actually making sure there can't be a transition. So the transition needs, instead of fear, it needs hope. Instead of hate, it needs love. The second is that this transition cannot happen while we think peacefully. We all have limits. Either I can start a garden, or I can be a good teacher, or I can be a wilderness protector. But even while we play our little role in our care for the earth, we have to be deeply aware of the web of life. And it's only when we see those interconnections at every step, we will stop doing what society has done for too long, competing with each other. Climate movement competing with the agricultural regeneration movement, the labor movement having to compete with the environmental movement. Too long have we been pitted against each other by those who thrive on divide and rule. The third very, very important aspect of the transition is, you know, 250 years of paradigms in economy and science and technology have literally groomed generations to think that, oh my God, what's going to happen if I don't have a job? Oh my God, what's going to happen when we run out of oil? Oh my God, what's going to happen if I've got to return to the village? What's going to happen when there's no electricity? The only way we make this transition is by looking at small farmers and their societies, looking at indigenous people and their societies, first developing respect for them, not looking down on them as primitive, but realizing that they created a very, very large footprint with a very high culture. We can only make this transition as an earth family. We can only make this transition through the joy of living, not being married to the junk that industrial society has created.
Baby, you and I've got a lot to learn. Don't want to waste another day.
play your part, make romance. It might break your heart, but if you think that time will change your ways, don't wait too long. Don't wait.
And with the words, "don't wait," ends Chaz K's new composition, An Earth-Toned Collage of Collages, and also ends this installment of New World Notes. We come to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Our show's webpage is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. And there you can find a link that will get you, absolutely free, the uncut original version of today's collage and 111 others by collage artist Virtual Renderings, or Chaz K. Same dude, different monikers, and no offense to Monica Lewinsky, the only party in the entire Bill Clinton impeachment proceedings to act with any judgment, knowledge, wit, and taste. So, hats off to Monica, if you can still afford a hat. But I digress. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, advising illegitimi non carborundum, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Till then.